To say that the concept of marriage is under assault by the forces of evil is an understatement. On September 21, 1996, exactly 29 years ago today, President Clinton signed the DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which prohibited the federal government from recognizing same-sex unions. 10 years ago, on June 26, 2015, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that same-sex unions are a constitutionally protected right. How did it change so quickly? Well, first of all, we have to understand that there's a large section of this country that just hates God and everyone who claims to be a Christian. You know, Peter said that the devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. That's in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. And Satan has succeeded in devouring many, and those filled with his hatred are going about the religious world, or at least those who claim any connection to the Bible, they're going after them, to attack them, to destroy them. Just like the Jews in the first and second centuries constantly stirred up mobs to attack the people, especially in the first century, they had constantly attacking Paul. Hateful people like that are coming after Bible believers today. And one of the ways they do it is they attack the biblical pattern of marriage. That's just one way of them coming after us, coming after anybody who claims to follow God. That's one of the first reasons. One reason. First, another reason is that we just don't always do a good job of explaining what marriage is. We don't do a good job of clarifying God's divine standard for marriage in contrast to those that are presented by the religious world around us. Now, I think in fairness, we have to admit, there have been a lot of efforts. People are constantly trying to explain what biblical marriage is. But that message from us is often blurred by the messed up message coming from the religions around us. Religions like Islam and others that treat women like objects that are to be locked away, hidden away, and submissive and submissive to the point of just treated like objects instead of people. And not only that, there's some within the Lord's people sometimes that almost treat women like that. And there's been a struggle because of our lack of recognition that language has changed and ideas have changed. You know, and when I was a kid in the 50s and 60s, you know, well, not 50s, but in the 60s and 70s, the idea of, divorce was so rare. I didn't know anybody that I went to school with whose parents were divorced or that their parents were not married to one another. And then that over time, that has changed considerably. And the idea of traditional marriage has changed considerably. And so we use the phrase traditional marriage without realizing that it has completely different meanings to a lot of people in this world. We have in mind one man, one woman for life according to the biblical pattern. But most of the world sees that as a master-slave relationship that allows the man to do just about anything he wants and the wife has no rights. A lot of religious people think of it in that way. And even here in America, the phrase carries some form of that thinking in some places. And we've not always recognized that. And so when we say, well, I believe in traditional marriage, somebody may be saying, wait a minute, you're talking about a marriage where the wife, man gets to beat his wife and slap her around and treat her like dirt? That's not the kind of marriage a Christian should be standing for, and that's not what we're talking about. And so we have to be very careful when we say the word traditional marriage. In fact, I would recommend that just lose that phrase, traditional marriage. Just lose it. Because it just doesn't mean the same thing to people that it might have meant when people my age were growing up. It just doesn't mean that. Instead, defend biblical marriage. Talk about biblical marriage. So, if we're going to discuss anything, well, let's talk about the biblical pattern of marriage, not traditional marriage, because that can mean anything to all the different people that we might come in contact with or have a discussion with. That's the second reason why marriage is in difficult straits in America today. And third one is that too many Christians have failed at having a biblical marriage, and the world is quick to label everyone as a hypocrite by association. Now, it isn't fair, and I know that among us there are some who have suffered personally from marriage problems, and let me assure you that this lesson is not designed to belittle you in any way or to suggest that you did something wrong or that it was your fault. We're all free will moral agents. And even the most long-standing and best marriages have problems that require two people working together to overcome. And sometimes one of those two people, and sometimes not always the same person, has to carry the burden from time to time while the other may not be able to or for whatever reason doesn't. But eventually, even the best marriages will come back together. But if one spouse, you have two people in a marriage, and that's always going to be the case in a biblical marriage, two people, if one of them is unwilling to follow the biblical pattern, the other spouse, the one who's trying to follow the biblical pattern, cannot force compliance. This is, we talked about this morning and about and trying to reach out and convert people and try and turn people into Christians. We can't use force to do that. And we cannot use force to make a spouse be the person that he or she should be. And so I hope that nothing I say tonight adds to the pain of any who have been hurt by an ungodly spouse. But as we're continuing our study of 1 Peter, we're coming to a section that talks about that, and it's a biblical subject that needs to be discussed. And so what we're going to do tonight is talk about the concept of submissive spouses from 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, and we're going to break it into two lessons. Tonight we're going to talk about the wives, and then next week we'll talk about the husbands. And we're starting with the wives because that's where Peter starts in verse 1. And hopefully when we come out of this, we'll have a little bit better understanding of the biblical pattern for marriage, what God expects from us in marriage. And I want us to notice something. There's something interesting here in the text that Paul says, or Peter says twice in the same way. Look at verse 1. Let's read the whole text, verses 1 through 7. And then I want us to notice what Peter says in verses 1 and 7. But let's read verse 1 through verse 7. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker. So she is a woman and would show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered. Now I want you to notice what he says in verse 1 and verse 7. First to the wife, he says, in the same way. And then to the husband in verse 7, he says, in the same way. And so that raises the question, in the same way as what? What's he referring back to? What's he connecting this back to? And it's three things that we see in the text that we looked at in the previous lessons, beginning back in verse 11. And it's the idea of submit, support, and surrender. This is what Peter is saying that God requires out of every Christian in life relationships. Submission, support, and surrender. Male or female, doesn't matter. Those are the three attitudes that we are to develop in our relationships with other people. Going back to verse 11 of chapter 2, he's talking there in reference to the world, the Gentiles around us. Verse 13, he talks about the human institutions. Everyone submit yourself. So all of us are to learn to submit to the higher powers. And then in verse 18, servants, be submissive to your masters. And the idea there is obviously if we're at work, we're going to have to be submissive to our boss. And we're to follow the pattern that Jesus laid out for us, as he explains in verse 21. And so Jesus shows us how to submit. So anytime anybody says, well, submission, oh, that's just oppression, that's just something that's evil, the Lord demonstrated us how to submit, or demonstrated for us how we should submit. So if it's humiliating, well, the Lord showed us how to do it. So we need to understand that there's something that we can do and we should do. And so we're to be submissive. So let's talk a little bit first about the idea of submission. And that's the idea there in verse 1 of voluntary ranking under. Go back to verse 13. You see that in chapter 2. Submit yourselves. That's voluntarily ranking under. That's recognizing levels of authority. It has nothing to do with value or intelligence or abilities. It's just recognizing that within any structure in society, there are levels of authority. Your boss probably has a boss. And that boss probably has a boss. Up until the CEO, and then CEO's boss is all of the stockholders in the company, if it's a stock-owned company. And so there's always someone in charge. And so that's the idea of ranking under. It's kind of a military term. It just, you understand the roles of authority and you submit to that. Somebody in here is going to be learning all about that, submitting to authority pretty soon. And it's something that all of us have to recognize and understand. And it's used for the wife, though not used about the husband, it's implied implicitly there that husbands are going to be submissive as well. And the idea here, though, is that it's voluntary. And I want us to focus in, we talked about the word submission, I want us to focus in on the word voluntary. Voluntary means that it is a choice, by choice, not compulsion. The wife submits to her husband voluntarily. This is her duty. Not because she's lesser than the man, not because she's less intelligent. I'm going to tell you right now, in this congregation, there are some really smart women. And you husbands, if you don't think that, you're not very smart. Sorry. Yeah, so they're just smart women. So don't think that because they're supposed to submit to you that somehow or another that makes you better than them. I got somebody laughing on that one. Makes you better than them in any way. God has set man in the leadership role in the home and will judge us for our performance in the role. Men will be judged for that. We have a leadership role. We will be judged for that. Why do you think Adam is declared as the cause of sin? Because as the leader of Eve, it was his job to keep her from giving in to sin and being misled by Satan, and he failed. So he's the one responsible. What she did was his fault for letting it happen. And so and we'll talk more about that next week. I don't want to get into that too much. But anyway, but here's another important point about this voluntary versus compulsion. Guys, it is not our job to make our wives submit to us and comply with the biblical pattern. It is not our job to get in their face. Well, you know, the Bible tells you have to submit. Don't go that path. In fact, one of the worst things to show that you don't have any business being in leadership role is to try to pebble. Well, I'm in charge. You're going to do what I say. Husband got that attitude. They're not very smart. And they're not being godly. That's not the way. It's not our job to make our wives submit. It's their job to voluntarily do so in accordance with God's will. And a good marriage is going to have a partnership and a working together in a way that's going to be a model to the world of how two people should work together to demonstrate the will of God. Just as Paul uses a marriage relationship as a model or an illustration of the Lord's relationship to his church, to his people. And in fact, in a sense, we are the submissive spouse to our husband, the Lord himself, as members of his church. It's not our job to show her who's boss. Those ideas and that thinking, and that's kind of that old thinking that goes back even to the traditional marriage days of the 50s and 60s that we have to get out of our mind and make sure that that's not who we are and how we think. Well, that's the first thing, is submit. The second thing here is to support. She is to support. Let's go back to chapter 3. Verse 1, he says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. So you're just like Christ modeled for us how to submit. A good wife will model to her husband, an unbelieving husband in this case, of how to submit and be respectful. And this honor here is in verse 5, he says, for in this way in former times the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husband. And then verse 6. Just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. The wife is to honor and respect her husband just as Sarah respected and honored Abraham by calling him Lord. And this reference comes from Genesis chapter 18. Turn back to Genesis chapter 18. I think it's important that we read this because there's a little bit of a humorous part to this that we might miss if we don't go back and look at it. Because we read the part where Peter quotes about her calling him Lord. But there's something else that Sarah said in there that's could be taken a little bit humorous, shall we say. Go back to chapter 18. Let's read verses 9 through 12. This is when they tell, you know, the Lord appears and says that within a year, Sarah's going to have a child. Verse 9 of Genesis chapter 18. Then they said, and where is Sarah your wife? And he said, there in the tent. The Lord speaking through this angel representative said, he said, I will surely return to you at this time next year. Behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son. And remember, she's 89 years old. She's no spring chicken. She's 89 years old. As far as her, she's concerned, that train left the station a long time ago. And Sarah was listening at the door, tent door, which was behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. So she's referring to Abraham. But notice what else she's throwing in there. Is this going to work out for me? Is this possible? Because my Lord, my husband, is an old man. Because he's 99. And so she's actually, there's a little bit of humor here and comment about their age. I'm old and he's even older. And so as guys, I would just recommend don't make these jokes about your wife calling you Lord. Don't even do it humorously. Because she could turn around and say some things about you that are true and could be intensely humiliating, maybe not necessarily call you an old man. Now, my wife could call me an old man. In fact, I'll tell you a story. So, years ago, this would be 2005, so 20 years ago, we take our son off to college, and somebody took a picture of the four of us, my wife, my son, and my daughter. And when I got the picture, I looked at the picture, and my first thought is, who is this old man with my wife? And it was me. Yeah, so wives could say things about us that are true and could also be humiliating, and we have to. So be very careful. And so don't be. I would just say, just avoid the idea of saying I'm your Lord, you must submit, or you call me Lord, or any of those things. Just wipe it out of your mind. Because even if we think it's funny, it probably isn't to them. In fact, another confession. You know, my grandson, he and I have gotten to where we do these old dad jokes, and we pull up all these dad jokes. You know, things like, I got fired from my job at the bank as a bank teller because a woman asked me to check her balance, and I pushed her. You know, those kind of things. So little kids think that's funny. My wife just stares at me like I have lost my mind. I think they're funny. And my wife and daughter just think I have lost. Anyway, so don't try to be funny, especially when it's dealing with sensitive relationship issues like that. And not only that, not only is it not funny, it could lead to some of that conflict that we talked about this morning from Genesis 3:16, where the husband and wife are conflicting with one another. The point is, it's not about calling him master, but respecting his God-given duty and supporting him by giving him honor. That means don't berate him. Let's go back to to 1 Peter chapter 3, 1 Peter chapter 3. And let's look again here at the text. And notice some of the things that it says here in this text. He says that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. So the idea there is don't berate or attack verbally. As a guy, I can tell you, we don't react well to that. It just doesn't go over well. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but it just doesn't go over well. And so let's not both of us become involved in doing things that we shouldn't do. So don't berate. And another interesting thing here is because what will happen is some men, they'll push men over the edge. And it just doesn't work. But another thing that's really not so much here in the text is if the husband is not stepping up and being the leader like he's supposed to, like Genesis 3 where Adam didn't step up and lead like he should have. Remember, God condemned him for listening to his wife instead of doing what God had told him earlier. Is that so sometimes if guys won't do what they're supposed to do, women just have to step up and take a leadership role. And that's a dangerous thing to do. It gets tricky. Some things have to be done, and so it gets a little tricky, but it doesn't become what it should be. And so if women respect their husbands and don't berate them and then don't take over their jobs for them and let them grow into the leadership role that they're supposed to have, it may never be the most romantic and fulfilling marriage relationship. You know, the happily ever after Disney story type stuff. But it can be a divinely established partnership if each person, husband and wife, does their part to the best of their ability. Well, the third thing we want to see here tonight is surrender. So we've got submit, we have support, and we have surrender. And this is the part about surrendering to God. Not so much surrendering to the spouse, but surrendering to God. I want us to go back to this. When he says, in like manner, or in the same way, well, let's go back and see about the surrendering here in these other relationships that are talked about here in chapter 2. Go back, first of all, that it's to glorify God. In verse 12, he talks about keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that as they observe your conduct, they may glorify God. So the idea is bringing glory to God. And then when you look at further on in chapter or verse 5, in verse 16, verse 18, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good, but to those who are unreasonable. If for the sake of conscience toward God, in verse 19, so conscience toward God, it's for the Lord's sake, back in verse 13. That's what I was looking for, verse 13. The Lord's sake in verse 13. Conscience toward God and finds favor with God in verse 20. So the such like is the idea of doing things that are like the way we live in the world, and the way we're supposed to live in the world is by surrendering to God. So in our relationships with one another, and we're relationships with our family, with our friends, with our coworkers, with our bosses, with our society, with our government, is we are surrendered to God. And so whatever the Lord says that we're supposed to do, we will do because He wants us to. Whether it's something that we enjoy or not, it's because the Lord wants us to do. And so we are to develop a character that is patterned after God. And the example of this, again, is Jesus. Verse 21, for you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in His steps. So the Lord showed us how to do this. And the goal is for us to have eternity with Christ as His bride. We are all His bride, not husbands and wives alike, who are in the Lord, are His bride, and we surrender to Him. And so there we have submit, support, and surrender. And there are more things we could talk about, but I think that's enough for one night. Let's wrap up with what I call the ABCs of marriage. The ABCs of marriage. I forgot. I do want to go back to this. It does talk about adornment. It's the internal part, the inside. Lord says the focus is not on how we're dressed on the outside. It's on how we're dressed on the inside, what our hearts become. So we need to put on a gentle and a modest heart. Now the ABCs of marriage. The ABCs of biblical marriage, again. First one is adopt an attitude of submission. And this would be across the board. Submission to the needs of the spouse, the needs of the family. That's our job. The second is be the one who submits. Don't be the one who says, no, I'm not going to do what I'm told. I'm not going to submit. I'm not going to give myself in or give in to her or give in to him. Be the one who submits in the right way, in the biblical way. And then the third thing is call it the biblical pattern of marriage. Those are your ABCs. Call it the biblical pattern of marriage. Find out what the Bible says, model it in your life, model it in your marriage, and just maybe the world will see there's a better way. And we won't have the mess that we have in the world around us today. So let's wrap up with this final question. Are you a submissive spouse? And this is for men and women. This is not just for the women. This is for all of us. Are we submissive spouses? Do we submit to the will of God? Have we surrendered to God in our marriage? And that begins with surrendering to God in our hearts by submitting to the will of God. And if we're not a Christian, then we got a problem. If we are a Christian, but we still have that attitude, maybe it's that attitude, I'm not going to do what God says. I'm just not going to do it because I want to do it my way. It won't work out well, either temporarily here on earth or eternally in heaven. So let's work on doing the will of God. You will open your songbooks. We're going back to the old ways here. Talking about old time stuff. I'm going back to old time ways. I'm going to sing a song of invitation, give you an opportunity to submit to God's will this evening. If we can help you do what's right with God, right with your life, let us do so while we stand and while we sing.